This is the business of writing agents' inquiry letters and pitches, as opposed to the business of writing the basics, which was in here right beforehand, and as I see Brad and Gregory were both in on, so they will inform me as moderator if we're covering some of the same material.
Now the real story. No, it's going to be.
Let me just ask, how many were here for the last session? About half. All right, so we might cover a few things in between if we have time. Well, why don't we start with Brad, and we'll introduce ourselves. And
yeah, there he is.
We'll let Mr. Helfers set up his nameplate while we're doing that.
No, just keep talking about a nameplate.
And you can make one, sir. And we'll go from there. Brad.
Sure. Hi, I'm Brad Bullier. I have a book that just came out from Nightshade Books. I've been doing this stuff for about 10 years. I wrote a whole lot of query letters, so hopefully I have something to add. I'll let you pitch speculate for us.
Cool. My name's Gregory Wilson. Last introduction of the con, so sad. I know, it's kind of depressing. I'm an associate professor of English at St. John's University. I teach courses in fantasy and science fiction, along with creative writing and others. My first book came out 2 years ago. My next ones are being shopped as we speak. As Brad intimated, he and I co-host a podcast called Speculate, the podcast for writers, readers, and fans, both talks about and interviews authors, talks about writing techniques used in various speculative fiction works, and you can find out more information about that at speculatesf.com.
My name is Don Bingle. I'm a gamer-turned-writer. Write short stories, and I've now written 3 novels, most recently Dead Impact, which is a spy thriller. It and a lot of my backlist of things is available on Kindle and Nook also, more coming. I'm an attorney, but I am not giving you any legal advice. I am not your lawyer, and my law firm is not your lawyer either. Please do not give me any confidential information. I have to say that. John?
Greg, you're crazy. This is my last introduction as well, and I'm actually rather pleased about that fact.
It means the con's almost over.
Great.
So sad.
I hope you've all enjoyed yourselves, too. No. Real quick, my name is John Helfers. The name tag pretty much says it all.
What does it say?
Author and editor for 16 years, working for Central Books, packaging many books. I have read a tremendous amount of query letters, good, bad, and indifferent, and this is the range of some of the anthologies that I'm going to be giving to Don after the panel, since these are your books.
Woohoo!
Take it away.
Okay. Don? Yes, I'm the moderator here. Well, since we're supposed to talk about agents and query letters and pitches, let's start with the process. I mean, you finish your book and you want to get somebody to publish it. You have a couple possibilities. You can attempt to get an agent. You can attempt to go directly to a publisher. Now, despite the fact that you can go 2 different places, basically, and you can also publish it yourself, although that's not the focus of this, because if you have to write yourself a query letter in order to self-publish,
dear me,
problem.
What sucks is when you reject yourself. That letter is just.
Yeah, you might look into your medication. let's focus.
It's not for me.
let's focus on the process. I think both of those situations, require a query letter that sets forth the basics of what you're looking for. And what's the basics of you're looking for? I'm looking for you to publish my book, or I'm looking for you to represent me in getting my book published. If you have a recommendation from somebody else that the agent represents, or somebody else that the publisher publishes, and they have told you that you may use their name, or they have told you that they've recommended you, and you can say that, don't do it unless you've gotten their permission. I think that that's very important to get out right up front, And then I think the, well, I think the letter needs to contain something about the book that will hook the editor in the same way, but not necessarily the same thing you use, but in the same way you hook a reader. Why is this project going to be of interest to me as a publisher, or why do I think I'm going to be able to sell it as an agent? So you have to make your story sound cool, whether or not it is. You have to make your story sound cool. And then I think you do this all, by the way, in one page. And I think the you want to end with letting them know it's done, because a lot of people query before things are done. It is finished. What the word count is, don't say pages. Give the word count. Your computer will count them if you... Well, it's the easiest way to have your computer count them. And how to thank them. Don't get into extraneous things about your mother liking it, how you worked so hard on it, how it took you 15 years to write. They don't want to know that. It's not relevant to their decision on whether or not to represent you. Thank them and give them contact information. Have I left anything out, guys?
No, that's pretty much it. You want to be succinct to the point. As Don said, exactly, a good hook is crucial because editors see a ton of query letters until their eyes are glazing over and falling out and bleeding and everything else. And so you want to engage them as quickly as possible. So, you know, dear blank, which agent or editor's name should go in after the dear part. You know, what happens when mutant French fries take over the world and the scientist and his lovely girlfriend slash assistant slash secret agent girlfriend, you know, stop them. Well, I'm not sure I read the book, but that line certainly gets my interest, rather than I have a book called blank.
And I will say the other thing that I, self-correcting here, did leave out is agents and publishers all have submission guidelines. Don't assume they're all the same. Look at them, and if they say, when you send me a query letter, I want 3 pages, I want 10 pages, I want 3 chapters, give them exactly what they ask for. Don't say, wow, they're going to like it so much, I'm going to send them the whole manuscript instead of the 3 pages they wanted. No. Play by the rules. They appreciate it when you play by the rules. Don't do stupid, silly things like printing on yellow paper or putting a dollar bill every 5th page or, you know.
Receive money.
Or a lottery ticket.
Or sending them candy. It's just, you know.
Or dead animals.
Yeah, just follow the submission rules.
Kidding.
There are no submission rules that say include money or dead animals.
Right. And actually, that's an important point. There is some very, 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 very bad advice that's been propagated on the internet in a couple of scenarios suggesting that you should ignore what we just said about the guidelines. And, like, if you send in a full manuscript, no one is going to throw away the next, you know, Dean Koontz, no one is going to throw away the next this person, because they would be stupid to do that. And the answer is they wouldn't think of it as stupid. They would think of it as being exhausted. When you're as exhausted as John is, you don't want to have to be like, but I might be missing the next Dean. God, go away, you know? It's a matter of demonstrating, and by the way, you are making a statement with that initial query letter. It's not simply the book itself. You're also making a statement about yourself as an author. And if you represent yourself in a particularly professional way, it is more likely then that that editor will think, this person is more likely to be professional in the future. And the query letter often can be tailored depending on in what way you initially contacted the agent slash editor. If you met the editor in person, as I did John when he bought this book a couple of years ago, you can mention in that, you know, in your query letter, we've had a chance to speak. Originally it was over email that we got in contact, but I've enjoyed meeting you at the convention. I really appreciated what you had to say. You had suggested that I maybe send something along to you, and so I'm doing so. Here's the, you know, either the partial manuscript, whatever they had asked for, or they may just ask for, you know, send me some information about the manuscript first, and then you do that. And so you can tailor it depending on how you contact them. If you've never done that and you've just, you know, found them, you know, they're sitting there on some, you know, agentquery.com or querytracker.com. We'll talk a little bit more about those sites later on. if you find them there, then you can say that in the course of your letter. But you can tailor it based upon how you first got in contact with them. But the point is that query letters need to reflect you to the extent they can, your professional self to the extent they can. And that means they don't need to reflect your personal life. They don't need to reflect other things that are irrelevant to the decision being made by the agent or editor, which is, can I represent this person not just because they came up with a cool story and they seem like creative people, but because there's someone that I can rationally work with and who isn't going to give me a hard time. And that is the calculus, correct me if I'm wrong, that goes through the head of many an editor and agent. Will this person give me a hard time? And do they have something valuable that I can sell, market, etc.? Those two things are things that need to come through in your query letter.
Of course, you know, Greg did it right. He was on his knees clutching his manuscript saying, please, please, please.
I did. I was like, please, God, here, candy, here. And,
in the men's bathroom, putting the manuscript under the stall. Please, John, please.
Perhaps Abraham Lincoln could say something at $5.
Greg is absolutely right. I mean, and the part about, you know, do follow the rule. I can't stress that enough. Because we would like to find the next Dean Koontz or Nora Roberts or Greg Baer or David Brenner, whoever it is. That's always a great thrill for us. But the fact is that when editor takes on a project, they're entering into a partnership with the author. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Greg sitting in a sweaty little garret, taking his little fingers to the bone and working on this great magnum opus that's going to change the world, at least in fantasy, which may be a fantasy often, but no, he's put his heart and soul in that, and that's fantastic. When he hands it off to an editor, of course, it's a different story now because I have power. I mean input. And now it's more of a collaborative effort.
Yep.
And yes, following directions means that we can trust that you will take editorial direction, which is vital because I don't have time to waste on somebody. And I've repeated this several times. Those who heard my other panels, I will say it again because it's vital. I don't have time to waste on someone who's going to fight me every step of the way. Now, Greg, I had a fair amount of comments. Some of them he agreed on, some of them he did not. We discussed them and, you know, came to a consensus saying, let's move forward. I didn't win all the time. He didn't win all the time. So, you know, but that's not how it is. It's not I'm going to crush you into the ground, and you're not.
It's not a competition. You know,
exactly. And we both want to put out the best product we can because it helps him, it helps me, it helps the line. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
Did we mention credits in the?
No. My name is 72-point font in the acknowledgments.
So Don mentioned not talking about yourself a whole lot, like how much work you put in, you know, that kind of thing. The only kind of personal, semi-personal stuff is relevant references, credentials. So some things might be short story sales, past novel sales would be an obvious thing, I suppose. Any awards that you won for your fiction. And then the last thing I'll mention is if you're writing a book that has some relevance to your personal area of expertise, if you're writing a hard science fiction story that includes, you know, some advanced laser technology and you are in that field, that's worth mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
If you're writing a alternate history or a period piece that's set in a specific time and place and you have credits in that area or you have studied it extensively, mention it. I think that's worth mentioning.
One thing. Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to tie into that. You don't want that section to get too long.
Yeah.
So if you've got more than one or two credits that you want to mention, just say, you know, summarize it somehow. I've written 30 stories and 3 books. Attached is a copy of my complete resume, or you can find it at, you know, blah, 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 your website.
Yeah. One thing about credits that I want to mention is if you don't, and I didn't, have other creative credits at the time, or at least not ones that are going to be relevant enough, you can look to see if you have other things that might count in that regard. I was talking about this in the last panel. I'm an academic, right? So I had academic journal articles published. I had book chapters published in an academic context. Those were credits that I used because they did represent the fact that I could A, write, B, have someone else accept what I had written, and C, that I could do so in a way that would represent me positively. So by mentioning that as a credit in the query letter, I've had 5 journal articles, I think is what it was at the time, published on a variety of subjects. I'm a college professor with da-da-da-da-da. Those are credits to have because they means that I have a certain, they can take me with a certain amount of seriousness. Like, I'm not a lunatic more than a college professor is a lunatic, but I'm not a lunatic in the sense of I once published this thing at, you know, Kinko's, you know, like I have some, you know, some published people who claim to be published authors, that's what they mean. So that's the kind of thing you can bring into credits. The flip side of that, though, is not to oversell. And that is not to sort of either make stuff up or, please don't do that, by the way, I once had a huge novel, which is not true, don't make stuff up, but also don't oversell it. You know, if you are an award-winning, best-selling author, and by that you mean, and I swear to God I heard this story this weekend, this is a person who had a contest on her Facebook page for how many people liked her work over someone else's work, award-winning and best-selling, among her Facebook friends. That's not a credit, guys. That's a credit that's dumb, and it's going to work against you because they're going to find out, because editors and agents don't want to be burned. They will, as just like you can, they Google works both ways. They will Google you. They will find out this is the case. They'll start looking, going, what award did you ever win? And, you know, then you're going to be in trouble. So don't make up things that you don't have. That said, if you have credentials, you work in, you know, a laser lab and you have a story about laser technology, or you are an academic and those are the credits that you have, you can use those to bolster the query letter that you send. The most important thing, of course, are the fiction credits. So if you have those, obviously those are the things you can put front and center, but don't oversell it, because that way there'd be dragons that
well,
way.
Well, okay? It makes you look desperate.
Yeah. And also you can't be trusted. And again, if you can't be trusted, no editor or agent is going to want to deal with you.
There was, there was a couple years ago, it's probably still circling on that, I can't remember the guy's name. But he was basically advocating that you should lie. This is before James Fry and his wonderful little true, not true, half true, partially true, not much true. And he was advocating that you do lie, which all the writers said, my God, man, are you crazy? Because nothing will undercut or end your career faster than that. And it really will end your career. I mean, before you even get started, you're done, because editors know everyone. You know everyone in the field, we just get the same cons, we drink at the same bars, and we share stories about who not to work with, because, you know, it's a small group, we usually like most of each other, although there's a couple, I can foss a couple people off on, but that's not the point. Typically, you know, we'll say, stay away from this person, run, screaming, because, you know, their award was best pet owner for my cat, Fluffy. Just don't do it, be succinct. And be truthful, and be honest. And Greg's example about parallel things, his articles, you know, meant that someone else had read his work without falling asleep. So, you know, once
well, I don't know about that. Yeah, right, yeah, exactly.
But it does help if you can bring some sort of knowledge to bear, or previous experience, or anything, a platform. A platform is what we're also looking for besides a good book.
Mm-hmm. They want to know that you're going to be professional. They want to know that you can finish something. They want to know that you can meet a deadline. And they want to know that you can tolerate editing. And so another thing to, and this may not come up in the query letter, but it may come up, you know, in a conversation or whatever, you need to be open to the whole editing process, because if they get the sense that you think your work is perfect in every way and, you know, is not going to need any editing, or that you're not going to be receptive to any editing, that's a red flag for publishers, agents, and editors.
And don't assume that an agent will just take your manuscript and say, oh, this is great, let's take it out. Agents often, for market considerations, will have editorial comments as well. So,
right.
Can we draft you there?
And by the way, yep. Don't submit an ungrammatical script with typos with the notion that that's the editor's job.
No.
No.
Consider the motivations as well of responses that you get from, obviously, editors, but also agents. And what John said about market conditions is important there. If an agent says, I think it makes sense to try, I'm interested maybe in this, but would you be able to make certain tweaks, adjust this, and this? Chances are they're doing it not because, you know, because it would be hilarious to see how high they can jump if I tell them to do it in this way. That's not why they're...
I mean,
maybe they do. They're mostly doing doing it because they have an understanding of the market, or they have a particular editor or house. They're thinking, I could probably sell this to this person, but they would need to, they'd only buy it if X, Y, and Z were done. Now, that said, if an agent that you send something to starts, you know, taking, you know, wide swaths across your manager, and this must be changed, and chapter 5 must be chapter 15, and you must, why do you have chapter 15? If they are asking you to make massive changes, then you have some thinking to do. And the first part of that thinking is really sitting down with yourself and going, is there some, can I see the validity of this? In other words, have they picked up on something there? If they have, and you think it's worth making those changes, then do so. But keep in mind that agents can also differ, that editors can also differ in what they would suggest be done to a manuscript. And there's no guarantee if you change a manuscript based on an agent's recommendations, that doesn't mean that the agent is automatically going to accept you, nor does it mean that the agent is going to immediately sell your book. So you're doing it a little bit on the basis of faith. It's an educated faith, if that makes any sense. It's an educated guess. You're doing it on the basis of what seems like good feedback or, you know, criticism to you. But you need to be aware of the fact that major, major changes are ones that are going to take away from your time and energy. That said, though, you also need to be open to the possibility of those changes. You need to be open to edits. You need to be open to the possibility of working with this person, whether it's an agent or an editor, to make your manuscript better. So those are all sort of considerations you need to think about when you're working. The one of the last thing I want to mention about the agent, too, is that if you get back a response that says, this is really interesting, but I think you might want to tweak this, 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 and this, although you should sit and think carefully, as I've just said, you should seriously consider the possibility of doing it, because that is anything that isn't a thank you blank, but I do not have time to respond to your blank, and therefore, you know, signed blank, you know, the obvious Xeroxed form letter, anything that isn't that, anything that is personalized, even if it's a rejection that said, this is not for me, but I would be interested in seeing more, that is gold. And that's the kind of thing that is a positive thing that you need to grab onto. That is not the same thing as a form rejection. And what you'll often find as you move forward in your craft is that initially you'll just be getting form rejection, then you will start getting more personalized rejections. This wasn't bad, but send me something else. And that means you're going in the right direction. That means that over time, you're eventually going to get to the point where you might have an agent say, fix this, 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 and this, and then we'll see about thinking about it. So if you get personalized responses, take the personalized responses into account because it means that you're close, certainly closer than you were before.
And that's something to mention in a query letter, too. If, you know, my second novel was a dark comedy about global warming, and I got, some responses. It was like, kind of like the book, but I don't know what genre that is. I don't know where to shelve that. I don't know how to sell that.
Dark comedy, global warming, what?
Like, yeah, it's in the dark comedy about global warming section.
None. That's fronts, right?
But I did have some people who said, but if you have something in the future, please send it to me. Well, then, the next novel comes around, then you go, you may recall that I previously sent you Green Sword, and you said if I had something else, I should send it to you. Well, here it is. Yep.
An important thing to remember about agents, very important thing, something that an author, screenwriter, whomever should always keep in mind. The agent works for you, not the other way around. And a lot of people get an agent like, I prostrate myself before your great agent form, tell me what to do, a wise one. No. It's your career. And you have to, seriously, a lot of professionals lose sight of this. And you have to make sure that when you go out to search for an agent, and that's another panel probably altogether, that you find one where your interests mesh. Because if you're an SF fantasy author, it's like, no, I want you to do cozy cat mysteries. That's a problem. Because a lot of agents will try to shoehorn their clients into fields they're not suited for. Yeah. And the bottom line is, it's your career. You should be writing what you want within reason. But then that means you have to find an agent who's going to represent you on that basis and take out what you both agree is, your strongest work, your strongest in whatever genre you decide to write it.
Yeah, one of the wake-up calls for me was I sold my book first, and then I got an agent. And I had known how hard it was to get agents, editors as well, of course, but I didn't realize just how hard. But there's a good side to this that I'll get to. So after I sold the book, I got the offer. Didn't sign the contract, of course. I said, please, give me a couple of weeks to find an agent. Editors will be fine with that. So I went back to my list of agents, starting right at the top, because I had a contract in hand, and I got out of the first five, I got four rejections before I got the agent that I ended up with. They were all about kind of the same, and I'm very glad I ended up with the one that I did, because we did mesh, and I'm very glad that I got those rejections, because they saw something that didn't quite mesh with them. I don't want an agent that doesn't believe in my work, or that doesn't have an interest in my type of fiction.
Or doesn't feel they can represent you to the best of their ability.
Yeah, it's
doing it for the paycheck.
It's not, you know, these rejections aren't a reflection on you. Those things weren't a reflection on me, or even my work, really. It just wasn't for them, and that's fine. I don't want them, and they don't want me, and that's fine. I found someone that works, you know, for me. I wanted to hop on to pitches a little bit.
Sure.
So one of the keys for me, anyway, for gaining interest is with the hook. The hook is, there's a parallel here between the query letter that you write to folks, agents or editors, and if you go to conventions and you're going to pitch to people directly, this could be at an organized session at like a conference where the conference itself will set you up with an agent or an editor, in which you have like 5 minutes to kind of talk about your work. Or if you are on an elevator, literally, with an agent or an editor, those things happen. Or at the bar or wherever, in the halls, it doesn't matter. At some point, you'll get asked, well, you know, what are you working on? Okay, and that first sentence, you do not want to ramble about your story. You want a single sentence, one sentence only, that talks about your work.
Such as?
That encapsulates it. I'll give you a couple of examples. Let me just finish. So the hook will kind of lead them in, and it'll be that kind of aha, you know, sort of thing. And then you will also have, in both your query letter, which is like this middle paragraph, three or four sentences that follow up on what that is. Because here's how it goes. What are you working on? I'll use mine. It's a epic fantasy, Song of Ice and Fire meets Earthsea with a Russian twist. It's not the greatest, but it gives an idea of what the book is about. It kind of encapsulates it. The other person will say, oh, interesting, to which you will immediately follow up with the rest of the story. Yeah, it's about a wind ship captain who's a prince of the realm, and blah, 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 blah. You go on. So refine those, and what you'll have to do, frankly, is you'll have one in written form that reads well, and you'll have to kind of translate that to a conversational tone. You won't just kind of read that query from rote.
Guys, don't glaze over. It is about the following. you know?
So work on those things. So when you translate it to the conversational style, say it out loud, say it to your friends, work on it so it's kind of like fast and easy for mm-hmm. you. Okay, so a couple of examples, and I'm really kind of curious to hear some more. So one that I've actually from a friend that was writing a book that I read, I came up with William Gibson meets Trainspotting. So kind of the something meets something is really easy, okay? And it gives a pretty good idea if you can pick the right two things, right? They're immediately recognizable. It's a little bit cheap, I will admit, but it's also very effective. So that's one way.
A lot of times it does add, because it gives the listener fairly clear picture, why improv you're working on right now. It's not, and this is not perfect either, and it's not, you know, we really come to something a little better about where pitching is Spy Kids meets Ghostbusters plus steampunk. That gives you the separate genres that were blending together. I heard one movie pitch that was clear just by, it's Jaws meets Paws. And that was it. That was it. Like, okay, you're done. We're sold.
Let me give you one more type. If you're really good at writing first lines of your book, and I'm not, but some people are killer at this. One that I heard a couple years ago that I love is, I went to Iraq a soldier and I came back a vampire. Right? I mean, listen to your action. Think about that reaction. That is what you're trying to get. So work through those in your mind until you, or with people, until you get that aha moment. That's what you're looking for the hook.
Right. This is. I swear to God, this is not patting me on the back, but
it reminded me
because I was thinking of just the combinations. When I read an original Events Review copy of Brad's book, the blurb I wrote him was, I'll just read the first sentence. If Anton Chekhov thought to stage the Three Sisters on board a windship with a mix of Arabian Nights and Minority Report thrown in for good measure, the result would have been Brad Bollier's The Winds of Kalakovo. So, and that's, I think, actually right, actually. This kind of his book. It's sort of weird. Like, what? Minority Report? Read his very good book, and you'll see what I mean. But part of it was not just sort of throwing in a bunch of things. The more specific you can be, the better about the titles that you use. And this is something I've had to do in my next few novels that are being shopped. My editor, my agent, who was originally Vice President Simon & Schuster, and worked more on the sales side, so he was used to doing what's called tip sheets. And in the industry, tip sheets are things that basically do little summaries, and they're increasing numbers of sentences depending on the summary. So you got the one-line elevator pitch type summary. You've got the three or four-line larger summary, the paragraph-long summary. And this is something that they will use in-house to see, what the heck is this out of the 50 books we've read? Oh, yeah, okay, I remember that particular one. And I completely forgot where I was going with that.
Bringing your own tip sheet.
That's right. Thank you. So, it's a good exercise to think about doing that, and the more specific you can be, the better. Doing sort of broad comparisons, like this is Harry Potter meets Lord of the Rings. What the hell is that?
You're gonna hear the groan coming from New York.
This book is Avatar combined with Da Vinci Code. Don't just grab things that are like, this is really popular and this is really popular, double popular. That's not what you want. You want things that sort of specifically summarize it. In the example that I just read, there are obviously windships. That's obvious from the cover of his book. There are these almost, I would say, sort of seers, let's say. I'm really oversimplifying it. That almost kind of like the precogs in Minority Report is the way I thought of them, even in the way that they're sort of represented as how they get into the position to see. And the Russian twist. And so I was thinking about things like Chekhov and that kind of, the Eastern European feel that Brad was going for. So the more specific you can be about your own work, the better. One thing that implies is that knowing the field matters. One of the things I always put in my query letters was something to the effect of, this will appeal to the same, to similar readers, or it is in the vein or in the style of blah, 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 blah. Please, God, don't say in the style or vein of J.K. Rowling. I know that's the holy grail, and you're like, it's just like this. If you liked Harry Potter, you love this. But try to find someone that's a little bit more realistic and more likely, not just on sales, but in terms of comparisons. And one good thing to do on the agent side is, if you can look and see other clients that those agents have represented, oh, hell yeah, and that last sentence of the last paragraph of the query letter, you want to be like, this will appeal to the readers of blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. Amazing, I agented those people. Maybe it will appeal to me. You want to think a little bit about, maybe it will appeal to similar things that the agent has represented before. So all of this is to say that doing research ahead of time, looking at other people that agents have represented, looking at other works in your field that are similar to yours, my agent always tells me, it's thinking about what book in the shelf will mine sin next to. Not just alphabetical order, but what genre, what subgenre, what other books will people consider? Oh, I really like this, so maybe there's a good chance I'll like this. The more you can think of that ahead of time, the more you will be prepared going in, and the more you will gain the respect, probably, of your agent and editor who thinks this person did his homework or her homework going in.
One real quick thing. For God's sake, don't say you're the next J.K. Rowling. And if you're going to... Comparisons are great, particularly taking out an element of an author that you have.
Right.
The gritty dystopian cyberpunk future of William Gibson, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
Fans of is a good thing too, because you're saying I'm not that level, but I think I can speak to that audience with my work.
Yep.
Right. And I actually think that if you're going to do the kind of two book or two, whatever comparison combo thing, that actually picking something that is not the most popular thing in that field, but may have a little bit more sense of what your book's about. When I was pitching Greensword, I used to say, this is kind of a combination of The Day After Tomorrow and Thank You for Smoking. There's only a limited number of people who even know, thank you for smoking. And sometimes I would say office space because it kind of feels, you know, but it's the same, kind of feel.
I think a better comparison.
I do too, but it's a little bit more obscure.
Yeah.
But I think that's better than, you know, trying to compare it to, you know, to blockbuster books. By the way, Thank You for Smoking is an excellent book, much better than the movie.
The movie wasn't bad.
The movie wasn't bad, but the book is better,
okay.
Which is often the case. But it's very true that you do need to be able to do a casual pitch for any situation that may arise. You may meet a neighbor and find out that they have some connection to the industry at, you know, the neighborhood barbecue. And Beth Lawn tells a story about meeting her agent in a swimming pool, and they started talking. And she did her initial pitch in the swimming pool. And it has to sound like a natural conversation, not like in a little automaton. You need the pitch. Blah 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 blah.
Yeah, that. Let me just quickly say that natural conversation part is extremely important. In the last panel, Maurice Broaddus was saying that the last thing he wants to hear. He's editing an anthology called Dark Faith. Is in the bathroom, someone being like, "So while we're here together," and the way he put it was, he's here to do a job, and that's not the job that he's doing right now. When you're trying to pitch to them, the point is to make it organic. So rather than someone saying, you know, "Oh, what's your work about?" Again, you want to, as Brad suggested, naturally allow your answer to come, not to be like, "I'm glad that you know that sort of leaning forward, eyes get wide, you know, the sort of well, now that you know,
yeah,
like really, I mean, you know,
you've fallen into my trap."
Exactly. You don't want to do that because, again, you're not. It's not just about this particular work or this particular conversation. It's about what the. Think of it as chains, right? You're chaining it to the next thing. The next conversation is not. It's not about this conversation. It's about will they want to talk to you again. It's not about will they want to talk to you again. It's will they want to read your work. It's not about will they want to read your work. It's will they want to accept it. It's not about will they want to accept it. It's will they want to put right. So you're always thinking not just about, you know, you're thinking about not doing something that's going to seem desperate or over the top or, you know, repel them. And I know, and I we all laughed about it, but it's hard, right? Because we really want our work published. We are excited about it. We are passionate about it. And they want to see that you're passionate about it. You don't want to be like, the work is about the follow. You don't want to sort of over, you know, deadpan it, you know, and I must be professional. That's not, you can certainly be excited and animated. Well, you know what it's about is, but there's a way to do that without seeming desperate and over the top. And before people say, but I'm not really good in those situations, you need to practice. You cannot simply say, but I'm not good at dealing with, but you're going to have to learn. Because you cannot, the days, if these ever existed, of being a reclusive hermit who only emerges to give his manuscript to the adoring masses and grunt before returning to solitude, those things left a long time ago if they were ever here. And so one of the things you need to think about is having a sort of a natural conversation with them. Like, you're hoping to work with this person, right? So you're hoping to say, I'm really looking forward to working with you. Here's what my book is about. I was looking forward to working with John. I was like, John, please. I had a conversation with him. And that is so much, that's going to further your career to such a greater extent than being either desperate or deadpan. And if you don't know how to do it, practice with friends, with family. You're not awkward with everybody, I promise. Even people who say, I'm awkward with everyone. No, there's someone, a friend, a family member, a loved one, someone you know who you can feel comfortable with. Practice with them.
And just, you know, start with the mirror. Just look at yourself and check. It's a good idea is to have one line, a one paragraph of about four or five lines, and then a one page.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a lot like that scene in I don't know how many people have seen Reservoir Dogs here, but when the undercover cop's like, you know, memorize this like two fucking pages. And his handler said, no, you got to make it your own. And that's key. Don't just memorize it and then, this is my recitation of my plot. And we're hammering this hard, but it doesn't. It's a very crucial point. Make it your own and practice it until you're comfortable, until the rhythms fall naturally, and rewrite your summary. If it's not working, if something's hanging you up, why is that happening? Why am I not doing it as good as I want it to?
Yeah.
And we're talking about book lines. And, you know, look, most of the books that are going to be written by people here are going to fall into a genre category. And so you're going to start out by saying, it's an epic fantasy, or it's blah, blah, blah. You not only want that
next line to hook them in some way, you want to show how the story that you've written is distinctive in some way. So when I'm pitching, you know, my spy thriller, say, what are you writing? Well, you know, what's the last project you've been working on? It's a spy thriller about my main spy is not Hollywood's idea of a spy, you know, and that tells you a little bit about the book and can set the hook, but it also distinguishes it from, you know, the main thrust of many books and gives them something interesting to go on. Mm-hmm.
One thing to keep in mind too is the sad truth today is that editors cannot buy your book by themselves. So one of the pieces of advice I gave previous days was that you're doing the editor a favor, actually, by do some work for them. Try to get them excited about it in such a way that they can both categorize it and champion the book internally. Then they have to, if they like it, they have to go to this cross-department meeting with sales and marketing and sell it to them. And so the more that you can do to help them understand, you know, where it is in the bookstore, and what makes it unique. That's kind of a weird thing, right? They want to be able to market it, but they want it to be new too. Yeah. So it can't be too new.
Same, yeah.
Has to fall in an identifiable genre, yeah. But it has to have something about it that sets it apart. We got 10 or 15 minutes left here, so I want to go to questions so that we make sure that we hit what you were looking for.
So in a query letter, if you have plans for your book to be part of the series, do you mention that, or do you just introduce the one book?
Yeah, you absolutely should. Saying the first book of a planned trilogy or whatever else, and the reason for that is they would like to know that there's more. They'd like to know it's not just about this one book. I've made this point several times. It's not just about getting this on the shelf. It's about you as an author and building your career, and they want to know that they can come back to you for other work. So, yes, absolutely, you should do that.
At the same time, make sure that your book
if it's true.
Stand alone
yes.
in case you don't get the pickup.
Oh, well, yeah.
Because they don't want half a book. And neither, by the way, do your readers.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you've written a book that is the first of a series and it does not stand alone, also, then you're ending your book at the wrong place.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's also another problem. You have beyond the letter.
Yeah.
When you're pitching, like, those two titles together, but you feel like one of those titles might throw the person off a little bit, let's say you choose Tombstone and H.P. Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm.
But my issue is, like, it's not completely H.P. Lovecraft, it's like H.P. Lovecraft. So,
well, that's fine. I mean, unless you're saying, you know, my work is H.P. Lovecraft in Tombstone.
It's just a teaser.
Well, it's, you know, elements of,
right.
Shades
yeah,
of,
yeah.
Or it's like, the overpowering horror of, you know, whatever.
Well, that's
like,
awesome.
What Brad said, blank meets blank with a Russian twist, you know. That kind of thing.
Add a qualifier at the end. Yeah, and
overpowering Russian twist.
It does not have to be super accurate, frankly. It's just to get them to get to that next paragraph, so you can kind of talk a bit more.
Yep.
And then hopefully that you can talk even more after that.
I'm going to be very careful about it. It doesn't have to be super accurate. You need to give that feel.
Yeah.
And if they go into it thinking one thing, and they say, well, okay, this is...
No, right.
You will throw them off. Although Sheriff Cthulhu in Tombstone, you know, see that happen.
Well, I just mean, don't...
That's the thing, because it's not really horror. It just has kind of the same mythos. So that's why I'd be afraid of just saying it's Lovecraft,
but it's
like
not,
Lovecraft,
well,
but it's not.
Yeah. That's an interesting take on that.
It's
so ordinary.
It's a little weird.
Well, whatever. But the way to look at it is, if it elements or you know shades of or you know that sort of thing resonances, it resonates with that thing would allow that again, as Brad said, allows you to get to the. You want them to keep reading. You know, they're looking for reasons to be like no, and if they keep reading and keep reading and keep reading and get to the end, then they're like, all right, that's what you want them to do. So
keep listening if you're doing the verbal pitch,
and not because it's a train wreck, but because you did it the right way.
There and then there. Well, it should be more of a pitch than a synopsis.
Okay.
And it should be maybe one kind of longish or mid-sized paragraph or two very short paragraphs.
I would say no more than 4 to 5 sentences, get your situation, your conflict, and put in shades of the resolution. Don't try to leave the agent hanging. They're not going to read it, go, oh my God, this is fantastic. As a reader, they're reading, oh my God, how can I sell this? This is fantastic. So do make it fairly complete.
And yes, and if the agent asks for a synopsis, which is a longer explanation of the work, always, always resolve it. Don't leave the cliffhanger.
But for more, read my full... Yeah, no, they're not going to. And they're going to be annoyed if you do that.
Wait. So shorter is better? Shorter is better, shorter is better. Less is more with the query letter. You never will go over one page. And the more... Don't try to cram everything onto, like, one page. One paragraph, two small paragraphs. The more spare that it looks and the punchier the hook and those paragraphs are, the more likely they are to read it. The more stuff that's on it, the more complex it gets, the more Baroque, the less likely they are to ask for more.
Right.
And by the way, in terms of the two-book or two-movie or whatever comparisons, I tend to use that more in conversation than I do in letters. I think it works better in conversations because then you can kind of gauge whether they're reacting well and they seem to know those things, and you can then, you know, adjust the rest of your conversation. As a letter, it comes off a little screenplay-ish.
Yeah, for a letter,
I think, and you don't know if they know those works well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for a letter, it's more like the appealing to, you know, fans or authors that I mentioned before of these particular writers, especially when the writers are represented by that agent. That, I think, works better in a letter context.
There.
Like if you're using a specific genre, but it's not like the biggest name in the genre or something like that?
Yeah.
Unlike blah, this.
For example, if you were writing something about someone with multiple personalities, and you say, this is not like Sybil.
I think that you could play off of that.
I've never seen it done, really, so I wouldn't advise it. Because you want to concentrate on your strengths, and... the agent writer may be the biggest fan of Sybil ever. I was like, well, screw you. I love that movie. How dare you? So don't.
That's terrific.
Don't assume. Just play up your strengths and what's positive about yours and why it's marketable today.
Yeah.
Again, that's a guideline-specific request. Some say... query letter synopsis through chapters, some say query letter and the manuscript, some say such and such, so just follow their guidelines. If it doesn't seem clear to you, ask them.
I almost always drop in a resume whether or not they've asked for it, just because it gives more detail on other credits than making them go to my website.
Yeah, that's a pretty good idea.
And if you're sending stuff hard copy, always, 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 always self-addressed stamped envelope.
With enough postage.
With enough. And if, by the way, if you're
self-addressed, non-stamped envelopes you receive.
And if you're sending the full manuscript and you don't want to, you know, pay for the postage, you get the whole manuscript back. Just, you know, say, you know.
At the bottom of your cover letter, is a disposable manuscript.
Yeah, you may dispose. You know, you need to return the manuscript, but here's a self-addressed stamped envelope for your reply.
Others?
So for the query letter, do you do it in the voice of the book, or are there specific, like, this has to always be in first person, or is it third person, past, present, like,
does
it matter, or do you do it
I've seen experiments done with, you know, trying to write it in the voice, but it just feels gimmicky to me. It feels like it's, and I have a feeling, I don't know, that most editors and agents would react to it as a gimmick, that you're trying to, you know, it's as if you're in my book. And they're like, yeah, but I don't want to be. Because it's not, I'm repeating myself, it's not just about the book, it's about your professionalism vis-a-vis the guidelines the editor gives you. You know, if the editor responds and says, I'd like you to change this and this, or the agent, you're going to be like, in the same voice, but I wouldn't do that because I'm, you know, like, stop, you know. I've seen experiments done that way, but I think for the most part, sticking with a reasonable, rational, business-style letter is probably the best way to go, in my view.
Oh, I don't recommend necessarily that you take the voice from the material. However, the tone is very important. I think you should try to capture the tone of the piece. If it's humorous, if you're good at humor, you probably ought to get a little bit of humor in your query letter.
Yeah, that's true.
If you have a dark, horrific tone, you should try to capture that tone in the query letter. In the description of...
Doom will face you when you read this. Signed evilly. Sincerely and evilly.
sometimes you just... you may want to try a flyer on something. When I was shopping my early screenplay, there's a director that a producer that I thought might be interested in it, and I saw an interview with him, and he said, if you send me something, it better be funny on every damn page. I ought to be able to pick any page at random, and it should have something funny on it. So I wrote him a letter, and I said, I've written a screenplay. I think you'll love it. You give me a page number, I'll send you that page. because I saw what you said, and I'm confident in my screenplay, and I thought that was I was the cleverest guy in the world. Did I ever get a reply? No. Did he say, oh yeah, send me page 86, I want to see what's funny on page 86.
I love this banter we got going on. Clever recycling big guy.
It was a flyer, and I took it.
But that was just you having fun, though. I mean,
partly because I was having fun, but partly because there was no frickin' way I was going to get through this guy's minions without something like that. So I took a flyer at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned a website or two in passing while we're trying to find lookup agents.
Thank you for reminding me. Two that I recommend that we mentioned last panel as well. One is agentquery.com, agentquery.com. That is a site that has a list of agents sorted by genre and has a list of their agency contact information and, that sort of thing. And normally we'll say, I represent books like this, but don't send me this. Sometimes they'll even be that detailed in the descriptions. The other one that I use is called querytracker.com, QUERYTRACKER.com. QueryTracker.com not only does what I just said, have all the stuff sort of a genre and so forth, but it also has comments from authors that have worked with those particular agents before. It also has a listing of response times, which is kind of cool. So the people get response times, they go back and they put that into this database. So it then lists how long did the agent respond, how many partial manuscripts has this agent requested, how many fulls, did they request any via snail mail queries or email queries and things like that. So it's very detailed, and there's a free version of that site and a paid version, which I think is maybe $20 or $25 a year, and I used both of those when I was looking for my agent initially. Editors and publishers you can find elsewhere, like absoluteright.com, we mentioned last time, absoluteewrite.com. There they have a whole series of forums, one of which is called Beware's and Background Check. And in that forum, they have a list of agents and publishers. You can find out more information about them. Also, Raylan.com, R-A-L-A-N, that has a number of markets, including publishers specifically, and presses that are looking for authors to contribute or submit to them. So those are some starting points.
Two other very good websites are Writers Beware.
Oh, yeah.
And Predators and Editors, both adjuncts of CIFWA, science fiction and fantasy. Writers of America.
I think it's Writer Beware, isn't it?
Writer Beware.
And it's on the sfwa.org site. You can get through to Writer Beware. And also on the CIFWA site, there is a list of the agents that represent CIFWA members. And it's very important to be pitching to an agent that matches your genre, because otherwise you're just wasting everybody's time, postage, and electrons. So we are out of time. But you can try and catch us here at the table or out in the hall afterwards if you've got additional questions.
If anyone has any tickets, please bring them up.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.